Got wheels of polished steel. I've got tires that grab the road. I've got seats that selflessly.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ.
I've got a Portland. Mind that can steer me to your house.
This is AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's smart talk station. That's cake. Satan is my motor, which is appropriate for our next guest, since we're kind of taking a slightly alternative path. We were getting mad as hell in the first hour, and now we're in the first part of this hour, of the second hour, we're talking about the power of voice. And the idea that you can give this to yourself or to someone else as a gift. What a great gift to give someone. And I'm trying to think a little bit alternatively this hour. And so that's what brings us to our next guest. His name is Mitch Rofsky. He is president of something called the Better World Club. His experience represents nearly two decades of leading businesses that market environmental products and nonprofit organizations that support environmental stewardship. Mitch was president of the American Consumer Insurance Agency, Inc., president of Working Assets Capital Management way back in the day, which managed one of the leading socially screened mutual fund families in the nation. In a former life, Mitch was an attorney for Ralph Nader's Public Citizen and was also the first chair of Business for Social Responsibility. He received a JD. What is a JD?
A law degree.
A law degree. I'd say I don't know anything about that. He received a JD from the University of California at Los Angeles and a BS. Now, that's something I do know about in economics from the Wharton School of Business, the University of Pennsylvania. Mitch Rofsky, welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam. Good to be here.
We're going to talk about the Better World Club. And your company self-describes as, quote, this is from your website, an environmentally friendly auto club. Until I heard about your company, I didn't know that the AAA was environmentally unfriendly. What's up with that?
Well, we're the nation's only eco-friendly auto club. And we were invited into this space by the environmental community. The environmental community approached me a little over 10 years ago and said, hey, can you help us out? Because we fight AAA all the time. AAA is part of the highway lobby. And so we fight them. And they said, can you help us out? And at that time, as you mentioned, I was running really the only progressive insurance agency in the country. And we said, hey, maybe we shouldn't just be fighting AAA. Maybe we should be competing with them. And that's when we started Better World Club.
So can you give me a snapshot of how, in what ways is AAA not green?
And I'll give you kind of two perspectives on it. The first is historical, which is that AAA started in 1903 in order to advocate for roads. Okay. And right. That is its corporate culture. Ralph Nader, in fact, gave me a PR manual, the AAA from the 1960s.
Uh-huh.
And in it, they have questions and answers. And one of them is, how should we respond when we are challenged to have highway tax money support mass transit? And the answer is, you should label that person a zealot. So that shows you what their corporate culture is like. Having said that, bringing us up to what we're doing today, we fight AAA on numerous issues. We just were fighting them on what's called the three-foot rule in California. The California Assembly passed legislation that would require motorists to give bicyclists 3 feet when they passed them, and would even let the motorists cross a yellow line to do it. We came out, we pushed Jerry Brown to sign it. AAA pushed him to veto it, and he vetoed it.
Okay? Jerry Brown vetoed
it. That's exactly right. Okay, so that's just one example. We're fighting them on bike lanes. Okay, the head of AAA's Mid-Atlantic region said that the bike was the enemy of the car. And we're fighting them on bike lanes right, all over the place, but right now in Washington, D.C. Then we fight them on greenhouse gas regulation of automobiles. Okay, we've come out for that, and California has passed legislation in favor of that. AAA did not endorse it. AAA has even, if you can believe it, opposed getting marketplace royalties on oil drilling. There was a proposition in California a few years ago, and Southern California joined Chevron to defeat a proposition that we were supporting, which would have increased oil drilling royalties from substandard rates. Over and over and over again, we're fighting them. But having said that, what we also have the opportunity to do is to create many more benefits for responsible consumers than AAA offers.
It's like under every rock, you know, you think the AAA, I mean, it's got to be innocuous. How bad can it be? And it's like under every rock, you find out, you know, they're colluding with Chevron. It's insane.
Hold on. Here's one more thing that's interesting about them, which is they virtually never tell their members what they're lobbying on. Mm-hmm. You can look through their magazines. They never ask their members what they should be lobbying on. And so people, like you say, aren't aware of it.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. Our guest is Mitch Rofsky. He is president of Better World Club. BetterWorldClub.com is the website. It is America's only environmentally friendly auto club, 24/7 nationwide roadside service for cars and bikes. Tell me about the bike service.
Well, as you just mentioned, we have the only nationwide bicycle roadside assistance in the country. Now, the good news, in a way, is that at least one AAA region here in Oregon is copying us, and they're now offering bicycle roadside assistance as well. But they only offer it in their region, which means if you take your bike across the bridge to Washington, you have no service. We have the only nationwide bicycle roadside assistance.
So let's talk about services, because
sure.
Again, what a great gift to give yourself, what a great gift to give somebody else. This whole idea that the paradigm shift isn't just in our minds, it also has to be in our businesses, where we spend our money. And I know I want to get into that a little bit later, because I know you spent a lot of time thinking about it. But let people know that, so say somebody's sitting at home going, oh my God, I can't believe this about the AAA, like I was when I found out about it. What services do you offer? Are they comparable? And just kind of give us the span of services.
Absolutely. First of all, you mentioned that we offer 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance. We also offer auto insurance, and as well as homeowners insurance and other property and casualty insurance.
You offer something called green auto insurance.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in okay. just a second. And then we also offer travel services of a variety of kinds. And we have just like AAA, we have a huge number of discounts. But we offer all kinds of benefits that AAA doesn't have. So you already mentioned our bicycle roadside assistance. But on top of that, we give 1% of our gross to environmental cleanup and advocacy. We were the first travel company to offer carbon offsets. When you buy auto insurance from us, you get a free carbon offset. We discount our membership fees for hybrids and electric cars. We discount our membership fees if you show us a mass transit pass. We also have, rental car discounts and hotel discounts, but we have deeper discounts on green hotels and green rental cars. We have the same maps and triptychs, you know, trip routing and all of that that AAA has as well.
And then talk a little bit about, so the green auto insurance is about carbon offsets, right? Is
correct.
Is there any other component of that?
That's the component right now. We are actually right now working on fashioning a much bigger green auto insurance program, okay? But as I don't have to tell you, auto insurance is a major complicated issue.
Yeah.
And so it means designing it and getting it approved by all the states is a big, big project. We are working on it right now because we think there is much bigger potential out there than anybody is doing. So we want you to stay tuned, because we'll have bigger plans. Having said that, though, we are the only company that does offer a carbon offset when you buy auto insurance from us.
And that just comes with it.
That's right.
Our guest is Mitch Rofsky. He is president of Better World Club. BetterWorldClub.com is the website. They build themselves out as America's only environmentally friendly auto club. As I said, I didn't know the AAA was an environmentally unfriendly until I came across Better World Club. We're thinking outside the box. They also offer the same kind of roadside assistance you would get for your car, but they also offer that for bikes. There's lots of other services that they offer on the website. It's really this comprehensive thing. I couldn't believe I hadn't heard of it.
And we also have a special right now for the holidays, where if you give two gifts, you get a membership free. If you give two gift memberships.
BetterWorldAutoClub.com is the website. We have a call on the board, Mitch, so we're going to go to it. Jeff in North Portland. Welcome to Mattis Hell in America. Jeff, you're on with Mitch Rofsky.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you very much. And hello, Mitch.
Hey, Jeff.
hey, you know, this is a great idea, because for a long time, I own 4 bicycles now. I'm very blessed indeed. But for a long time, I have felt that the automobile is just, by its very nature, the fact that the horse runs on the fuel that we've run them on for years and years, it's almost evil, although I'm not one to actually paint in complete black and white. But I really appreciate the idea the fact of the matter is, Adam, it's all about getting around, not like the old-fashioned way. It's about getting around. And this is a great notion. There was a bumper sticker that came out years and years ago from a friend of mine or neighbor who was involved in the School of Mines in Colorado. And the bumper sticker said it all in reference to at least automobiles and, believe it or not, disposable cigarette lighters, for instance. If it isn't grown, said the bumper sticker, it must be mined. And even though my 4 bicycles were each mined out of the earth, I am thrilled to know that the fuel that I put into my bicycles is stuff that I put into my mouth, and of that, I am very careful indeed. Thank you, Mitch, and I look forward to hearing more. I'll get off the line, and thanks very much.
Well, Jeff, one more thing very quickly. I hope that I hope you'll go to our website, check out our e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt. You don't have to be a member to get it. Sign up for it. And, you know, obviously we'd love to have you become a member as well. But
tell
either
me
way,
the website again.
Betterworldclub.com.
A Better World.
No, just Betterworldclub.com.
Oh, Better World Club.
Betterworld.com.
Betterworldclub.com.
Yes.
Perfect. Thanks a lot.
All right, Jeff. Thanks so much for the call. So this idea of voting with our dollars, setting up businesses and supporting those businesses, where when we spend money, we actually are voting for the world that we want to be in. This has a lot to do with the social responsibility. You've done a lot of work with businesses for social responsibility. I'd like to get into that a little bit. But talk about this notion of voting with our dollars and why that's so important.
Well, it's critically important. We all know how much business drives in this country, and business itself is driven by consumers and their spending. 70% of gross domestic product is consumer spending. And so it's extremely important for consumers, as you say, it's a phrase I use as well, to vote with their dollars. People don't realize this. It's not just the power of the American consumer. It's also the power of the progressive consumer. If you would look at the purchasing power of progressives, you're looking at something like the 4th or 5th largest purchasing power or gross domestic product in the world. Okay, progressives have a tremendous amount of buying power, and we need to be using it. We need to be insisting that our purchases reflect our values.
That's right. The idea, and that's a hard thing to do, and that's what I like about Better World Club. BetterWorldClub.com is the website. It's right there, so there's really no reason. Now that you know, I am going to join. I am without any roadside assistance, so I just do a lot of praying when I drive. And I also drive a Mini, so I have no spare tire. But the idea is that once you know, there's simply no reason not to spend your money at a place like Better World Club, or it's why I don't eat meat. It's the idea I don't want to empower an industry with my money that's destructive.
Yeah, what you're saying is critically important. And again, we were talking about staying tuned in the green auto insurance side for even more benefits. Meanwhile, we're building out our community site, and we are going to be building in consumer information that will enable progressive consumers, responsible consumers, to get more information about the products that they're buying. There is no one-stop site right now in order to get information, and we're going to start taking steps towards providing that information to consumers.
Our guest is Mitch Rofsky. When we come back, he is the president of Better World Club. BetterWorldClub.com is the website. America's only environmentally friendly auto club with 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance for cars and bikes. And that's a pretty popular theme for Portland. When we come back, I want to get into some politics with you, because I know you were basically a member of Raiders Naders, were you not?
Naders Raiders.
What did I say?
I'm a little young, but it's close.
Naders Raiders. When we come back, we're going to get in a little more deeply into some politics with Mitch Rofsky, president of Better World Club. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm Adam Klugman. We'll be right back.
Clock Man Revolution began. cars and they're trying to get through. There's no single explanation, there's no central destination.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's talk station, smart talk station, that is. Our guest is Mitch Roski. He is president of an organization called the Better World Club. BetterWorldClub.com is the website. It's America's only environmentally friendly auto club, 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance for cars and bikes. So we're talking about, Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
You had said something at the break that I thought was interesting, going from anger to answers. That's a good way to track what I'm up to, this show at least, because in the first hour we were mad as hell, and then in this hour it's about trying to come up with answers and solutions. The Better World Club, betterworldclub.com, is one of those solutions. We've been talking in the last segment about voting with dollars and the impact of that, and you laid out some pretty staggering figures about if progressives were really spending their money in a way that was consistent with their values, that we would have a very different looking kind of business infrastructure in the country. Mitch, we have a call. I want to go to it, and then we'll talk a little politics. You were one of Nader's Raiders. I want to find out about that. Clara in Lane County, welcome back to Mad as Hell. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. Are you there? Clara?
Talking in the dark, so I can't say hi to the name of the other person there.
It's Mitch Roski.
Mitch, that's right. And hi, Mitch.
Take care.
Yeah. So anyway, I was thrilled to listen. I just flipped on the radio and I thought, oh, what? You're kidding. And it sounds really great. This is what I've been waiting for. Occupy your car insurance. and before I forget to ask, I'm going to ask one question and then another quick one. Would you please have a program on about how we can get real phone service without getting all these terrible pirates stripping away our money on telephones and, I don't know, really, really awful phone companies that we have, and apparently they don't have to put up with that in France and some other places. It's ridiculous.
Kara,
but
Kara.
The other question is the phone number. Do you guys have – a lot of us don't have computers.
Phone number for Better World Club.
Sure. You can call us at 503-546-1137 here in Portland. Or are you calling from Portland?
Yes, Lane County. Well, Lane County.
Yeah, 503-546-1137.
Kara, thank you.
Hold on one second, though. You should check out Credo Wireless. Credo Wireless is the old working assets long distance. And it was formerly working assets long distance, now known as Credo Wireless, but check it out.
Yeah, it's a company that allows you to kind of vote with your dollars as well. And that's a lot of their credo. And they don't give money to Tea Party candidates like AT&T does. Our guest is Mitch Roski, president of Better World Club. BetterWorldClub.com is the website. They are America's only environmentally friendly auto club. I didn't even know there was an environmentally unfriendly auto club until I met Mitch and learned about this company. They offer 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance. All right, so let's get into some politics. We don't have a lot of time left. You and I have talked politics before. Let's talk about Obama. You heard my monologue this morning. The first hour. Where's your head at with Obama in this last speech that he gave in Kansas?
Well, the night of the election, actually, I was telling people that if I had a publication the next day, my headline would be Obama wins, Democrats prepared to be disappointed. and I think it's, you know, I want to say that I think Obama has done a number of very, very good things. But at the same time, there's obviously real disappointment among progressives. And you've been very nice. You mentioned that I post on Huffington Post. And among the things I've written about are that Obama, you know, it's one thing to come in and say you want to be bipartisan. That's admirable in its own way. However, you can't let the other side dictate to you. I mean, you have to put the pressure on them to come, you know, to compromise with you, not constantly cave to them.
Well, if the compromise only goes one way,
it's not a compromise, it's a capitulation, and that's my problem. And so he makes the capitulation, and then they don't reciprocate, and then it's no longer a compromise. It's not bipartisanship, and he's not winning any friends. So he's not winning any loyalties. So the lesson to me seems to be, it's time to take a stand, and let's help him take that stand by being very vocal about what our values really are.
I got
a minute left.
Yeah, very, very, two things very quickly. The first is that Obama's kind of set himself as the deal cutter. That's not the role for the president of the United States. His role should be the leader, not the deal cutter.
Oh, I love that.
And very quickly, we've talked a lot about consumers here, but we also, the Chambers of the Commerce and the other business associations are not representing at all the range of American business. I would encourage business people who are listening to go to New Voice of Business, NVOB.org, and check out, we are putting together a business organization that is going to take on the Chamber of Commerce on public policy, and we need every business person who doesn't agree with the chamber, and we're talking about millions, to get on board.
Mitch, I would like you to come back. It's an official invitation right now to come back and talk about the New Voice of Business. NV as
O-B.
In Victor, mm-hmm. OB as in boy, NVOB.com.
.org.
We need somebody to take on the Chamber of Commerce and do it right now. Mitch Rofsky has been our guest. He is president of Better World Club. BetterWorldClub.com is the website. America's only environmentally friendly auto club. 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance for service for cars and bikes. Mitch Rofsky, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Em.
Come back and talk about the New Voice of Business.
To.
Really appreciate it. When we come back, I always like to do things in the third hour that relate to Oregon. We have with us Jefferson Smith, Senator Jefferson Smith from District 47, who is running for mayor of Portland. We're going to have a long, candid conversation. We want you to join us. We are not having this conversation at you. Remember, we're having this conversation with you. So if you have questions for Jefferson Smith, if you can vote for him, or even if you can't, give us a call at 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. This is Matt as Hell in America. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now, coming to you live from the banks of the Willamette River, it's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Kleugman.
You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
Online at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620kpoj.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Welcome back to the third hour of Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Kleugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's smart talk station. And before I introduce my next guest, I'm looking at my emails, and I'm getting a lot of requests for the opening monologue. Thank you all so much for your interest. Let me tell you where you can get it tomorrow. If you go to madashellinamerica.com, all of my podcasts are there. You can podcast it. It will be up tomorrow morning. We'll probably be posting a video of it, too. We shot it here in the studio. Thank you so much for your interest. If you want to continue to support Progressive Radio and keep it on the air, I'm asking for $5 a month to get my podcasts and to get podcasts of the show and my archives. I also post the text versions of the monologue. I will do my very best to get that up tomorrow as well. So if you're interested in the monologue, it will be up tomorrow at madashellinamerica.com. If you want to reach me, you can send me an email at adam@madashellinamerica.com. If you want to join the conversation here over the course of the next hour, we're going to be speaking with Jefferson Smith. The numbers are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Jefferson Smith is going to be here with us the whole hour, but before I introduce the man himself, I want to play a little clip that I like very much. Let's roll it.
We can reconnect the people of the city with the power of the city. We can be a city that works for everybody. We will not say the city is only about parks or police or planning or fire, water, sewers, or streets. Because we're all in this together, and the city needs to be about offering a positive vision of hope and improvement, and then acting on that vision. and we will not attack our opponents. I like Charlie Hales and Eileen Brady. I respect them both.
Jeff.
They are good candidates. And this campaign isn't about me, and it isn't about them. We will run a campaign that does not do opposition research and pays for no negative advertising. Because we are all in this together. In America, there will be a city who will do small, real things with a big vision in mind. What city will do this?
Portland.
Who will invest in our schools?
Portland.
Who will make sure our transportation system is fit for this next century, not the last one?
Portland.
Who will make sure that it builds the kind of campaign that is linked to how we're going to govern, that is going to make sure that we're stronger together than we are apart?
We will.
My name is Jefferson Smith, and with your help, that's right, Portland will. Thank you very much.
That was Representative Jefferson Smith announcing his bid for mayoral candidate for the city of Portland. I'm going to read his bio here. I thought he would introduce himself rather than me introducing him. I love that clip, and I think that really captures the essence of who he is. He is someone with a big vision. I will be very clear about our relationship. Jefferson and I are colleagues. We are also friends. We worked together to create a spot called America's Party a few years back, which in 2004 won the DNC ad contest. I will make no bones about it. I am a big supporter of Jefferson Smith's work. I am also a big supporter of his candidacy for mayor. So let me read his bio. He was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. After attending Grant High School at the University of Oregon, Jefferson graduated magna cum laude from Harvard Law School. Afterwards, he returned home to Oregon, where he gathered friends together to start the Oregon Bus Project. If you're a progressive and haven't heard about it, you do need to know more. This grew into a national model of hands-on democracy for future generations. In 2008, Jefferson was elected to succeed Jeff Merkley to represent East Portland in the Oregon House. He successfully worked with citizens, lawmakers, and stakeholders to champion common sense, high road economic solutions like the landmark water investment program, the Cool Schools job program, and the economic gardening plan for homegrown Oregon businesses. Jefferson Smith, welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you in this capacity. It's the first time we've done this.
It is the first time, and I have a feeling it will not be the last. So I always like to start at the beginnings of things. So the story, there's a seminal moment in your life right after you graduate from Harvard. Many people who know you have heard this story, but I'm sure there are many people out there who haven't. So tell us about this moment. You graduate from Harvard Law School, and you get a gig, and what happens?
So I finished law school. I went to clerk for the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Afterwards, I took a job with the highest paying gig I could find, because it was the highest paying gig I could find. And it was a firm in Manhattan, actually the highest paying law firm in the country. And they more and more of their litigation work, it's something I should have figured out prior to going, but I had stars in my eyes, or at least dollar signs. More and more of the litigation work that they were doing was defending big tobacco. And I had done some work in law school researching for a professor in on those matters. I had embraced, this is the first time I've talked about this on the air before, I had embraced the notion that lawyers, that everybody deserves representation in the American legal system, but not everybody deserves a particular lawyer. And I, anyway, I had done some work on tobacco research on the other side, on the plaintiff's side, when I was in law school, realizing after I took the gig that that was going to be, and they had started out as a merger and acquisition firm, that didn't. Tobacco work wasn't how they got their start, but they had, after doing M&A work, had started moving into being one of the quarterbacks of the tobacco litigation nationally. I, knowing that it would be tantamount to a conversation that might lead to my departure from the firm, raised the issue, and after a couple of conversations, I left the firm, and in what was a mutual parting of ways, I think was the phrase used. And I moved back to Portland, start working for a law firm here. And about that time started, got some friends together and we started the bus project. And that was the strange, circuitous, unplanned path from me being, you know, maybe someday living in Oregon again, but at that point not living here, to living here now.
So one of the more kind of salient points for me in that is that you were confronted with a choice between a prosperous career and your values, and you chose your values, not knowing where they would lead you. And a lot
down of, the drain is where they've led me.
No, not at all. and I think that that's just an. I think the reason I wanted, I don't want to spend any more time on it because there's lots to talk about. But I do think that that's kind of at the core of who you are. And the people who know you see you push out a lot of information, and a lot of great ideas, and a lot of great energy. But I think the core of who you are is about somebody who takes a stand for his values. And in a mayoral candidate, that's something that I want people to know and understand. Okay, so let's move on. You are a state representative.
I'll tell you one other story if you want.
All right.
When we touched base about this beforehand, you said you wanted me to sort of make clear I was a human being, and I don't know if I am or not, but I'm prepared to play one on television from time to time. But I'll give you one story from that time. It's actually just when I got there, and this is another thing that I've never shared on the air. But when I arrived in Manhattan, you know, I came from a middle class family, right, and they were going to pay me $150,000 a year starting salary with an anticipated bonus of 50 to 100%, which, and this is 10 years ago, so my expected value is about $250,000. To me, that's, you know, that was all the money in the world. I was a 27-year-old kid.
That's a lot of money.
And I get there, and I go to McDonald's at night. It's after I've found an apartment, and it's an apartment, you know, spending more per month than I think my parents ever did on their mortgage in their lifetimes. And I go to the McDonald's, and an African Episcopalian church, I think it was an African Episcopalian church just around the corner, had let out. You could tell because the McDonald's was entirely full with people dressed up. And I was in line, and next to me was a family, an African American man with a Latina wife and two small children. And the kids asked their dad if they could have Happy Meals. And their dad said, no, you can have hamburgers. And the children did what I would have done in the same context. They looked at their mother and they said, can we have Happy Meals? And she looked at her husband. She said, can't they just have Happy Meals? And he looked at her and he wasn't mad. He was scared. Mm. And he said, well, we could. But then... And I realized, you know, I was 27 years old, about to take the, you know, fanciest job I'd ever had. And next to me in the richest country in the world was a family obviously working, obviously doing everything they could, discussing whether or not they could afford Happy Meals for their family members on for Sunday dinner. And I went in the corner of McDonald's. I started to weep like a kid. And so anyway, that's not the reason that I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up when I was 27 years old, but it was part of, I think, the struggle a lot of us face with how we want to approach our lives. To what degree do we spend our time and treasure to make sure our families are taken care of? To what degree do we spend our time and treasure on how other people's families are taken care of? So anyway, that was one day I was a human.
In some ways it answers my next question, but I'd like to take it a step further and say, my next question is going to be, so why do you want to be mayor? But from that, so
glutton for punishment.
Yes, certainly. But also, how does that inform your work as a legislator? And how do you think that seminal moment would inform your work as mayor?
Excuse me. There's the only one sentence answer that I've ever been able to come up with for why I'm running neither feels accurate nor sounds anything other than a political line. But so I have to give a few more sentences. It started out, I mean, I was born here. I went to high school here, went to college not too far away. But thinking about how city politics applies started a little bit with the bus, but more while I was serving the legislature. And I had a chance to do stuff in the state house that felt really important, that I really care about. You know, you mentioned a couple of them. We did state budget transparency to put the state budget online. We passed the Oregon Broadband Council to start to shrink the digital divide, or at least have a sense of where it is. We mapped the broadband high-speed internet dead spots around the state, cared about that, helped pass the biggest water bill in this state probably in the last 25 years, helped pass what was probably the first, the first human trafficking bill in the history of this state. Had a chance to pitch to the governor and help pass the Cool Schools bill to get a start at retrofitting public schools. And then I listen to my constituents, and I should clarify where I represent. It's Jeff Merkley's old House seat. It is the easternmost district in the city of Portland. And 73 languages are spoken in my school district, and 80% of the kids are on free or reduced price lunch. And when I was listening to what was impacting their lives, I was hearing the need for safety on the MAX line, the growth in gang activity and youth violence. I was hearing the need for an economic development plan beyond strip clubs and strip malls. Yeah. I was hearing the about 59 miles of unpaved roads, more than any major city in the country other than, I think, Oklahoma City. And I was realizing that a lot of these things were nothing I could do much about in the state house. So I'm running for mayor.
Our guest is Jefferson Smith. You can learn more about him at jeffersonsmith.com. We're going to get more into the nuts and bolts of what it means to be mayor and a mayoral candidate here in Portland when we come back. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Kledman. This is AM 620 KPOJ. I will get to your calls when we come back.
America with Adam Kledman, now on Portland's Progressive Talk, 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's smart talk station. I'm your host, Adam Kledman, and our guest is Jefferson Smith. The website is jeffersonsmith.com. He is currently a state representative running for mayor of Portland. Jefferson, welcome back to the show. Let's talk a little bit about East Portland for a minute, because no one wants to talk about East Portland. You're the only guy I know who really wants to talk about what's going on in East Portland. It's your district. You live there. What are the issues in East Portland? Why are they important to be addressed in the mayoral context?
So one way to think about it is the issues facing East Portland are the same issues facing the country, only more so. And I think that for about 27% of the population lives east of 82nd Avenue, I want to make the case that 100% of the city of Portland has to care about the whole city, including that part of town. So there's a lot of ways to get into it, but I'll offer a few facts. It's related. I mean, I gave a partial answer to why I'm running, and it was a decision I didn't take lightly. I actually have to give up something. I'm not retired. You know, I have to leave the state house, and I really like some of the stuff we've been able to do. I'll give you a few facts. So 27% of the population lives at East 82nd Avenue. 80% of the students in the David Douglas School District are on free reduced price lunch. 73 languages are spoken in the district. According to the Portland Tribune, only 1.8% of the population, 1.8% of the transportation dollars and stimulus dollars were spent there. Only 3.3% of the dedicated transportation dollars were spent there. When $11 million was spent for public school retrofits, zero went to Park Rose, zero to David Douglas, zero to Centennial, zero to Reynolds. You add that up, that's about a third to 40% of the school children in the city of Portland. They weren't even asked to apply. It is the place that lacks significant power in the city of Portland. If you were going to do a map of where the 500 most powerful people in the city of Portland live, you might get six that live East 82nd Avenue, right? And that's if you count me, right? And so when we started raising this stuff and started talking to City Hall about some of it, what we'd hear was, hey, listen, you got to understand the way, you know, Portland Power works. It operates informally. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And I said, yeah, that's the challenge. And too many of my constituents don't know how to squeak.
Right.
They're not squeaking in relevant ways. Right. Or they're squeaking in between their first, second, and the third job they're hoping to get, because none of them pay any more than the minimum wage, and they've got big families. There is a And it's linked to what's happening around the city. It's a, why should we care about it? Partly because we're progressive and compassionate, but partly because practically it matters. If gang activity and youth violence is increasing and festering in any part of our city, it can impact our entire city. If we've got that big a part of our population that is being left behind, right? Much of the city of Portland brand, a reputation, why we have TV shows made about our city is because we've been a city that compared to other major cities has been relatively ghetto free. But if we have a quarter to a third of our population living in or near ghettos over the next decade, there's not going to be that many more seasons of Portlandia, right? So it, our supply chains are linked, our workforces are linked, our customer bases are linked, our reputation as a city, our souls are connected. I mean, you know, we are all in this together, I think, in real, practical, and meaningful ways. And there's a lot of things we've got to address to try to understand what's happening. I would encourage people to spend time there. Feel free to shop. Try to find a local store. It's a little trickier. More likely to find a national chain store there. There has been increased density in housing during the 90s where we added lots and lots of housing without adding significant amenities. When people were building stores, they'd build a store on interstate. They'd have a no net loss of housing agreement. So then they would build the housing not in North Portland, but instead they would build it out in East Portland because the land was cheaper. And now we have 12,000 members of our minority communities who have moved from inner north northeast Portland to East Portland just in the last 10 or 15 years, right? Probably 20,000 if you go back another 5 or 10 years. I've got constituents now who vote for me, I hope, and commute to North Portland to go to church. That impacts all of us, not only because what's happening in inner north northeast Portland and outer East Portland are connected, but it impacts everybody in the city. Because you also then have to move a lot of the services. So we've built the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence, ERCO, which deals with refugees, move from Inner Gleason to Outer Gleason, JOIN, which deals with the homeless population, moved out to east of 80th. And that impacts all of our budgets for all of the things we want to do. So we're all in this together. I could go on for like 2 hours on this topic, put lots of people to sleep. I'm Jefferson Smith, and running for mayor.
Jefferson Smith is our guest, and he is running for mayor. When we come back, we're going to go to break. We have a question on the board for Jefferson Smith. JeffersonSmith.com is the website. I want to get a little bit more into the nuts and bolts. You've been talking about this idea of responsible banking. I'd like to get into that a little bit. I'd like to get into a couple of other issues like Occupy and how you feel Sam Adams handled it. When we come back, Jefferson Smith is our guest, running for the mayor of Portland. JeffersonSmith.com is the website. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm Adam Klugman, and we'll be right back.
Hell in America. Adam Klugman is on Portland's Progressive Talk, 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's Smart Talk Station. Our guest is Jefferson Smith. He's currently a representative, House District 47, and he is running for mayor of Portland. If you have a question for him, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. I want to get into some nuts and bolts, but we do have some questions on the board. And by the way, I played the Pearl Jam for you, Jefferson.
I appreciate that. I was wondering if it was a coincidence.
No, it's for you.
Yeah, I love it.
I know.
Love it.
I know. That's your band.
I get teased by younger staff members who don't still understand how cool they are.
Oh, one of the great bands of all time. The board is lighting up. Let's go to Hans. Hans, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You're on with Jefferson Smith.
Hey, thanks a lot. Hi, Jefferson. I have a small issue here that I think speaks to a larger issue. A couple of weeks ago, you called on volunteers to clean storm drains when we got that series of massive storms, remember?
I do.
Yeah, it was great. I responded, went to the end of the block, emptied this new street lake in front of my neighbor's house. It was cool. He was grateful.
Thank you.
We got to talk about this new leaf fee in Portland, you know, the $30 flat fee. Now, for my neighbor who has massive street fees, it's actually a good deal because he's otherwise spending $60 just extra getting those leaves away. Our oak tree in front of our house, it's not going to lose its leaves until spring, so we get screwed. I guess what this really comes down to is that it's a flat tax on all households, which by its nature hurts the working poor the hardest. So I'm really not talking about leaves. I'm talking about leaving the poor behind. And I was wondering what you could say about equity in general.
Thanks, hon.
So, let me say something about taxes and fees, and let me say something about equity. And if there's more, I'm happy to say more. Let me first say this. On any given issue that comes up, this might sound presumptuous, my recommendation to listeners is that, yeah, you should care a little bit about my answer to that issue, but what's probably most helpful is how I think through problems. So you'll know how to predict what I'll do, and you can best evaluate who you want to vote for and whether you want to help me win or make me lose. My sense on taxation is that the two fairest ways to tax are taxes based on the ability to pay and taxation based on usage, Pigouvian taxes. And taxation that is neither of those things is on has a thinner justification. From equity, I think that's got to be the critical lens through which we view decisions. Mm-hmm. There's more and more of a push by the Wall Street Journal editorial board, for instance, to move us to flatter and less fair taxation structures. It's motivating much of my race. I see it in my neighborhood. We have the biggest wealth disparities in this country since World War II, as I mangle that sentence. It's why I am, I think, the only candidate in this race who publicly supported 66 and 67. It is why...
Tell people who don't know what 66 and 67
was. Yeah, it was a set of progressive tax measures, relatively modest, but became pretty controversial at the Mac Club and at the Arlington Club and at the University Club and the various places where you go to find four-figure contributors. And it got us off of having a $10 corporate minimum tax, which this state had had for decades and decades, and had a modest increase in the personal income tax for families earning over $250,000 a year, maybe not the top 1%, but about the top 2%.
Right.
And it was the kind of thing that Oregonians were for, that Portlanders were very much for, but the donor class was far more, how shall we say, split. But it's why, you know, I think I'm the only candidate in the race that did not criticize the Communities of Color Coalition proposal for an office of equity in the city, just because I think that our city is changing significantly and it's not getting whiter. And we need to embrace that set of issues with strategy and compassion and realism. It's why I'm not surprised that we've had modern day Hoovervilles in camps, not only in downtown Portland, but across the country. And so I think we've got to address. Let me give four words through which you'll be able to predict how I at least try to evaluate policy and political questions: prosperity, equity, sustainability, and democracy. And I try to put hard questions through. I'll say them again: prosperity, equity, sustainability, democracy. I try to put thorny questions through those, and occasionally interests conflict, but equity's got to be a big one. In terms of, I would be fascinated in your idea, and feel free to hit me online on the best way or the better several ways to address leaf fees. JeffersonSmith.com is my website. JeffersonSmith@gmail.com is my personal email address. One of the easiest ways is to find me on Facebook. Again, it's Jefferson Smith because that's my name, and I'm running for mayor. And feel free to click like and post whatever you want.
Great. We have another question on the board, but let's talk a little bit about the way you're raising money. You're raising it a little differently than other candidates. Is that true? Where you're actually taking money from?
Yeah. So in Oregon, we have no campaign contribution limits. And in each of the sessions of legislation which I've sat, I've proposed at least one bill and generally co-sponsored more than one to try to do something about that. And so right now, if, for instance, Wells Fargo decided they wanted to purchase the mayor's office in the city of Portland. They could put in $1 million, and there's nothing that a state law or the Constitution could say anything about it. Therefore, you know, folks with an AXA grad, we can be a cheaper date. And so we're doing some relatively modest things. I am actually proposing, I would like, it would be nice if our candidates would come together around an agreement to kind of each modestly spend, so we don't just treat this as if it were an auction. Right. Unilaterally, we're deciding to do a few things. We're not taking any money from out-of-state corporations or out-of-state groups. We are we raised our first $100,000 without taking any monstrous checks, nothing over, you know, raised it all from contributions between $1 and $1,000. They say a lot about how those early relationships, you want to build an early relationship. And we wanted to make sure that those early relationships were as broadly based as possible. We have the lowest average contribution of any of the major candidates, and I think we'll continue to do that. We're going to try to have more individual donors than any city campaign in the history of the city. We've had nearly 800 in just 3 months, and which is a lot. Mm-hmm. And some of those are $5, $10, and we'll raise all the money we can. And we're going to try nonetheless to win this race through having the biggest grassroots campaign in the history of the city. I don't know if we can do that, but I think there's a chance we can do that. And money's only a little piece of that.
Our guest is Jefferson Smith. JeffersonSmith.com is the website. He is running for the mayor of Portland. If you want to support him, log on at JeffersonSmith.com. I don't have any problem saying donate. This is someone who I know personally. This is somebody who I endorse enthusiastically for mayor. In a minute, Jefferson, I want to get into this whole notion. You talk a lot about high road economics, and the slogan of your campaign is Portland Will. I want to hear about your vision for Portland, but I do have a call from someone who said they lived their whole life in South East 82nd. We are going to get into Occupy in a moment. I know there's been a call on the board. I want to get into it, but once we get into it, it's hard to get out of it. So I want to make sure that I really cover the things with Jefferson. So please hold on. Brian in Southeast Portland, you're on with Jefferson Smith.
Hey, Jefferson. My question is, how would you treat monies allotted to one thing but being spent on another thing, like our illustrious Mayor Sam Adams has been doing consistently? Things like water money and street money, road money, I should say, that motorists or pay and bicyclists have been using for their own gain. Can you say that you're going to spend the money that's allotted for specific things on those specific things?
Yeah.
So you do not support Mayor Sam Adams in what he did as far as utilizing monies for things that were not allotted?
So let me say two things. First, yeah, we got to spend money on stuff that money's supposed to go for. When we don't, it makes it too easy for Lars Larson and various angry bloggers to attack the institution of government, which is one of the reasons why we're in the mess we are in. Second, I want to avoid piling on too much to the current mayor that understood in a different way. I think that was a communications problem as much as it was, or almost as much as it was, an appropriations problem. What I mean is that we do actually want bureaus to collaborate. If we're doing transportation and road construction, and if we're laying cable underground, and if we are building sewage systems, instead of just one bureau doing their project, and then another bureau doing their project, and then another bureau doing their project, and ripping up the road three times, we actually do want them to collaborate. And so some of what Sam was getting whacked for wasn't terrible. It was actually clumsily communicated, but it was the kind of thing we should do, which is get bureaus to collaborate. At the same time, we got to make really sure that we're not taking from Peter to pay for Paul when Peter also is underfunded. And I will commit pretty hard to that. And I even think that the mayor's been, the current city council has been, I don't know if apologetic is the right word, but I think there are many people in city bureaus who have learned their lesson. So your point is very well taken. It's not the first time. You know, my own family, my own neighbors have been frustrated about understanding how money is being spent in the city. We will do our very best to put that on the level. But anyway, those are a couple thoughts.
Great. So let's move on to, I want to get kind of your vision of what Portland can be. I mean, I get the sense that we're really moving into the new century now. We're past the first decade. The slogan of your campaign is Portland Will. So I'd like to get your sense of what you think Portland will and can do. What's working now and where do you see it going into the future? So kind of lay out your vision as mayor for where Portland can go.
So Portland's getting bigger and it's changing. And we have to make sure that the best parts about our city transition to this century and into the coming decades. So what do I mean by that? We are actually a relatively big town now. We're nearly as big as Boston, Massachusetts in terms of population. That is weird for me, right? I went to law school very close to Boston, Massachusetts. And to me, that felt like a little bit smaller, big city. Right. And to me, Portland, Oregon feels like a big, you know, mid-sized town, a big, small town.
Right.
And as we transition, there'll be several things at issue. One of them is equity, as we've talked about. That's a big one. I've been to Detroit. I've seen what happens when a city doesn't handle its diversification and equitable considerations very well, right? And you have now, what, nearly 40%, I think it's 25% official unemployment in Detroit. It's nearly half if you take include people who are of working age but have stopped looking for work. So that's one way it's changing. I've heard three things since I've been running from pretty powerful people. One, Portland's too weird. It's too weird. Weird doesn't work. Second, that was the quote. That's not me saying that.
Right.
Second, too much, you know, this big commitment to civic engagement. There's too much process. We need leaders who will make decisions as I pound the table. And third, too much sustainability crap. There was a question on an endorsement questionnaire. 68% of Portlanders believe that living wage jobs are more important than bike lanes. Do you agree? Like, yeah, the other 32% of people thought that was a stupid question.
Right,
those are not
right.
The choices. Right. So, and if you ran on those three things, you'd be able to raise a lot of money, and you might be able to be mayor. But my favorite economist in town is one that happens to explain the best way that municipalities can compete and be successful in a global knowledge economy, and even the best way companies can compete, is by playing to their distinctive strengths. Not just trying to shave away their weaknesses, but playing to their distinctive strengths. And if I were going to define the distinctive strengths of the city of Portland, they would include three things. One, we're creative. Not bad in a knowledge economy going forward. Two, we're sustainable. Not bad in a world getting warmer and running out of oil. And three, we have a robust tradition of civic engagement, which has helped us be less corrupt. So to me, that's the good stuff. We've got to figure out how do we make, pivot that, kind of transition that, move that, apply that creativity towards the future of our economy and make sure that it's spread equitably. Second, we've got to make sure that we maintain a commitment to sustainability and do it in a way that works for more people. And as our last caller said, it's one of the reasons why I supported, not only supported, but pushed and accomplished budget transparency in the state of Oregon so that we don't kill the golden goose. We actually make sustainability investments that people support. And third, that we maintain a commitment to civic engagement. We make it clear that it's not just a stumbling block to making decisions, but we actually say there's going to be a city in the United States of America where, to a little bit greater degree than otherwise, the people rule. And this has got to be that city.
Yeah, I think that's right. Our guest is Jefferson Smith. JeffersonSmith.com is the website. He is running for mayor of Portland. I enthusiastically endorse him and encourage you to check out his website and support him as well at JeffersonSmith.com. As promised, when we come back, Jefferson, let's talk Occupy. That's our last segment. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. This is AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's Smart Talk Station. We'll be right back.
As it was, then again it will be. Sometimes rivers always reach the sea.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's Smart Talk Station. Okay, so I played some Pearl Jam for you.
I played a little Led Zeppelin for me. I think that's kind of the age discrepancy between us kind of sums it up there.
Exactly what I was thinking of. It's like Adam Klugman is to Led Zeppelin as Jefferson Smith is to Pearl Jam.
Absolutely.
And I don't just mean the delta of coolness. I mean in terms of generation.
Absolutely. That really describes the slight age discrepancy. Maybe it's not so slight. All right. So as promised, we're going to get into Occupy. Jeff, thanks for holding, man. I didn't want to get into Occupy until we had reached toward the end because it's a deep subject. Jeff, welcome to Mad as Hell in America, man. Your question for Jefferson.
Thanks, Adam. Great show as always. And hello to Jefferson. I just wanted to comment really briefly on your Obama stuff before I ask I had two quick questions for Jefferson. But I wanted to say, you know, right now America is in a similar place of inequality to what we were in the 30s with FDR, and very similar, people don't realize, to what Egypt has today and they had with Mubarak. So the question is Barack Obama going to clean house and get rid of all the remaining unprogressive members of his administration and offer us a Green New Deal like FDR would, or are we going to keep slipping into down the Mubarak Egypt road, because we all know how that turned out? So my question to Jefferson is, number one, it's great to know that he's addressing the Tale of Two Cities, the ghettoization of the east side of Portland. But number one, will he allow camping for political protesters in reference to Occupy? And then number two, will he do anything to get newer, clean-burning, more frequent service buses on our streets, as suggested by the transit expert Jarrett Walker in the current issue of the Willamette Week?
Great, Jeff, thanks so much for the call. I'm going to let you take it offline. Jefferson.
Adam, in the break, you asked me to answer the next question briefly. There were three parts. There is no way I can.
Take the Occupy question.
I will acknowledge that although it was unpopular, every time I was speaking to a group above about the fifth floor in an office building, I'm the one major candidate in the race who didn't call for the ouster of the Occupy camps within the first week or two there. And that's not only a manifestation of ideology, because we also have to be a city that operates by the rule of law, but also we have to recognize that the highest law is the Constitution. The right to peaceable assembly is first on that list. But also just strategically, I think if we had gone Oakland and downtown Portland would not only have not been a good manifestation of our values, but wouldn't have been very helpful for peace and safety. In terms of what we ought to do going forward, I think we ought – let me say something else about it. Not only am I not surprised that we've had camps here and elsewhere, I'm a little surprised we haven't had them earlier. We're in the same equity quartile category as the Ivory Coast as a country. Right, the United States of America is in the same category as Ivory Coast. I mean, it is a big, hairy deal that people should be caring about. And I, while I don't think Barack Obama is our primary problem, I share your hope that we will find more national leaders who will be part of the solution. And in terms of what we can do going forward with camping, one thing that I proposed at the suggested, there are other synonyms, at the recent Housing and Homelessness Forum, that'd be one thing, is doing what Eugene is experimenting with which is opening up parking lots of willing churches in order to do it. We'll try to find, I'm looking at what they're doing in Chicago, where Rahm Emanuel has essentially just let the camping go on. And wondering how that, if how they're dealing with it might offer lessons. But in terms of what we do going forward here, I think we ought to look at making sure that there are places that people can find a place to sleep. So anyway, that's a few things about it. There was other stuff in your question. Oh, you said something about buses. He beat me to it. Something I've been saying for a little while. And not only that, but Ethan Seltzer at PSU has been taught, his phrase was prettier buses. And as we spend a lot on rail and we spend a lot on highway projects for Vancouver commuters, one of the things that my constituents, for instance, need a lot is easier, faster, bus service. You know, I had a constituent who told me that, their commute went from, I think it was 52 minutes, or excuse me, 38 minutes up to 52 minutes. And that difference was just about the relevant difference, was she couldn't get the second job that she was hoping to get. So we've got to, So I do think we got to look at bus service. So that'll be a TriMet thing as much as a city thing, but the mayor can help.
Our guest is Jefferson Smith. JeffersonSmith.com is the website. He is running for mayor. And as I've been saying, I am an enthusiastic supporter of his candidacy and his work for many, many years. Jefferson, we've got just about 1 minute left. You want a parting shot? It's all yours.
Yeah. Let me say a couple things. One, this city can be great. The city can set an example to the nation of what a place can be. It's got a lot of work to do. And a mayor's not going to be able to do all that stuff. And I'm not going to turn around the global economy, no matter how many votes I win by. And I'm not going to solve every problem, certainly not going to solve it by myself. And in fact, what this city has gotten right is not merely that we've elected better people. It's that we've had a more engaged citizenry who has gotten on the same side of the table, approaching common problems, and decided our city is going to work as best it can, and we're going to help make it that way. And in order to be that city, we got to run campaigns like that. And if I'm going to run the kind of campaign that we hope to run, that's the kind of thing that we not only look to win some election, but actually try to re-energize some of the informal power structure, some of the citizen energy in this city, I can't do that alone. I need your help. So the most important thing I'd say is, if you're interested, I hope you will be interested. I hope you will go to JeffersonSmith.com. I hope you will go to the Facebook page and click like. I hope you will help us hit thousands and thousands of doors around the city and make thousands and thousands of phone calls around the city and raise money and small contributions from people everywhere we can find them around the city and state. I hope you will help. And if we can do that, I think we can help make Portland great. This city has been made great in significant part by people who have committed to it,
We've worked at it, and thanks a million. We'll see you next week. I'm Adam Klugman. See you next week from Mattis Hill in America.